and welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie. We are joined today by Admir Shakhmanovic, who is the Minister of Energy and Mining in Montenegro. Welcome, Minister. We also have Nino Vojanovic, who is Bruegel's Western Balkans expert and who comes from Montenegro, and our colleague Ruven Stubbe joining us from the Helmholtz Centrum in Berlin. And we are going to be talking specifically about energy links between the Western Balkans and the EU, getting off of the Russian fossil fuels, maybe adding renewables, linking up grids, and the importance of all of this in today's really stressful geopolitical context, given the troubles in the Strait of Hormuz. Minister, we would love to hear from you at the beginning about where Montenegro fits in this. You are the candidate country that is closest to joining the EU. You are in this energy community of countries that are trying to work more closely with the European Union. How does that look from where you sit?
Good morning from my side and goeie morgen.
Thank you all.
To you and to your listeners, it's my pleasure to be able here to talk about all the nice things that we did in Montenegro in the past year and a half. I'm very proud on our results and our dynamics and our path to the EU, which is our utmost goal. We know that we will be the next member of the EU, and we are pushing hard for it. So as it comes to energy, it's been almost a year that I took over this sector. And I have to say that we put first a focus on enhancement and the harmonization of our national legislation with the EU acquis. And I am very proud to say today that we did almost all tasks that would put in front of us by the European Commission. So we are leader in the energy transition in the region. And now we have enhanced this legislation framework, strategical framework, and now we are working dynamically on the investment side. So taking Montenegro in mind about our geostrategical position and our natural potential that we have here, we would like to position ourselves as a regional hub for renewable energy sources. So you might know that we are already connected with Italy with our undersea cable of the capacity of 600 megawatts, which is positioning ourselves as a regional bridge, let's say, between European Union and this part of Europe, considering Western Balkan and, countries and also further Greece, Bulgaria, Romania. Most of their exports to European Union goes actually through our cable. So I have signed last year a memorandum of understanding with my colleague from Italy for market coupling. And from that date, which happened in September or October, I don't remember quite well, European Union has 18 months to finalize the process of market coupling. That means that Montenegrin energy sector will be part of the EU even before our official membership in the EU. So what does it mean? It means that, as Ms. Ursula von der Leyen said last year in our investment conference in Boca Bay, investment in Montenegro means investment in the EU. So that made us very, very much attractive. And one more thing not to forget that we have agreed with our next strategical partner from Italy called Terna, who are the owners of the existing cable, to build another cable and to double the capacities of 1.2 gigawatts. So everything is on a good path to position ourselves definitely and to put concrete on that we will be a bridge for the energy. What is missing? We are missing investments. So what we did, we have introduced all the EU incentive mechanisms in terms of renewables, since we have all the laws in place. And we already had one call for the auctions, for the contract for difference premiums. But unfortunately, it was unsuccessful, not because of the lack of the interest, but because of some technical mistakes in the public tender. So now we are preparing another tender with support of EBRD and their consultants, and hopefully we will publish a new one in at latest in 30 days from now, and by which we will ask for 250 megawatts of solar technology projects, which we expect to attract foreign direct investments in the neighborhood of 400 to 500 million of euros. Additionally, since we have also in our system, in our private sector, we have like around 65 projects in the pipeline developed by private developers. And we are also seeking opportunity to work with them and to find a way how to start construction. So by this, we would like to have to be important partners to the European Union. So when time comes that we can be a source of cheap energy coming from green sources. This is our idea. So since we didn't have investments in our country in the production facilities in energy sector for a long, long time, the last project was done actually in 1982. This was our thermal plant in Pljevlja, which is very important project in our system because it produced nearly to 50% of our baseload energy. So now we have to find somehow some shortcuts in our system, in the legal framework, in order to have investments as soon as possible. So we saw this opportunity in signing of government-to-government agreements directly with countries in European Union and East. So we did it. We signed a G2G contract agreement with France, and we are now talking with their EDF, National Energy Company, about the mutual construction of new hydro plant in north of the country. Other than that, we also signed a G2G with United Arab Emirates, and now we are developing mutual projects. We will hopefully on 23rd of April, we will sign the joint venture agreement, and we will form like a mutual company between our national energy company and their national energy company. And we think that we could jointly working, and we could come up with projects worth around 2 billion of euros, all renewables. I'm talking only about renewables. So mostly solar, wind, and we are also considering some hydro plants that we could do together. Additionally, we are now in the phase of negotiating of signing G2G with USA. They are very much interested, and hopefully I think we can sign it in June already. So this is something that we have an agreement from the side of European Commission, and we are using this situation in order to attract these direct investments in our sector.
Thank you for that. I want to take a minute just to hear from Nina a little bit to put it in context for our listeners. Montenegro is one of six Western Balkan countries. It has been independent for less time than has passed since the founding of this plant that you talked about. How do we view this in context, Nina?
Thank you very much, Rebecca, and also thank you, Minister Shakmanovic, for elaborating on these country-specific issues. I'll touch upon market coupling, which we study in our study, and which was mentioned the importance of it. So you know the energy security is very important, in particular after the full-scale invasion of Russia on Ukraine. But even now, the new energy is so caused by the war in the Middle East. So the growth plan of the European Commission for the Western Balkans, which was enacted right after the start of the war in Ukraine, actually targets the market electricity coupling of the Western Balkan with the EU, because this is of a strategic importance for the EU as well. In our study, we find that up to 70% of electricity flows in the Western Balkan is actually EU electricity. So enlargement of electricity markets towards the Southeast Europe or the Western Balkan is really about unification of this market.
Is this even across all the countries, or is it more concentrated in some than others?
It's 70% across the entire region, so across all six countries together. And we can talk more about it later on. So basically, there are various benefits that electricity market coupling can bring to the Western Balkans, but also to the region. And we have noted down various in this study, but I'll concentrate on the most important three ones. So this is a win-win for the European Union and for the Western Balkans. First of all, by expanding the electricity markets towards the EU, you're gaining higher energy security and energy supply and cost efficiency, which is more and more important in the times that we live in. Second, and most important, bigger market brings higher competitiveness. Higher competitiveness pushes down the cost and prices, but also volatility of electricity prices. And with that comes like lower prices too. This is particularly important for the Western Balkans, because Western Balkan countries have among the highest electricity prices in the EU. So there is going to With market coupling, we're going to get some further competitiveness gain, in particular for the Western Balkans. And the third most important benefit would be, as mentioned by Minister, using untapped potential of renewables in the Western Balkans. Hydro potential is already much, much used. These countries are very rich in hydro potential, and even in the communist time, this was the potential that was used. But solar and wind power potential, irrespective of high investments, are still unused. This region actually has the highest solar potential after Portugal, Spain, Cyprus, Malta, and Greece. And with higher electricity market, you actually allowed the investments where renewables are highest, and you managed to actually source electricity from areas in Europe where renewables are, potentials are high too. So I would highlight that green transition can be much better facilitated to electricity market coupling too.
Minister, you were just telling us about a renewables project that you're working on. Has this become more urgent since the hostilities in Iran began?
Actually, we have started much earlier. But you know, like crisis like this and then the COVID situation and energy crisis in 2022, like shows us how important it is to build resilient systems to depend by yourself. Because like we were just talking yesterday, we had one TV show like saying like no one knew about the Hormuz before this. So now our kids are suffering because of that. Like why did we allow these things? Why did we allow to be dependent on something and not doing something to prevent this? Like, no, the time is coming now with all these energy developments, with all these AI developments. Now I think that my country has a chance to become big energy-wise, because there will be no difference between small and big nations. It will be the matter of do you have cheap energy or you don't have. Because also one of our goals is to attract investments in data centers, and we're negotiating with some big companies. But for this, you know that we need a lot of they are big energy consumers. So from one side, I think that we are maybe the cheapest in European Union when we talk about the energy costs, and also about the oil cost, and our energies are, I think, among the cheapest in European Union, and we would like to stay like this. One thing, because of our citizens, because it's a social issue in our country. From the other side, is for investments. So we know now market coupling will secure the exemption of the CBAM, let's say, for the beginning. So who knows which challenges we will face in the future? Like European Union is constantly coming out with some new directives, with some new constraints. So in order to be sure that we can handle all the situation in the future, we have to be strong, and we mustn't depend on anyone in the region. So as Nina said, like we have huge potential in hydro, solar, and wind. But solar and wind, renewable energy, it has to be like complementary with strong sources. So it's not enough to have only this. We have also to think about baseload energy. So talking about baseload energy, we are thinking next to hydro plants, we are exploring actually this situation in this sector with one Japanese company, with which I signed a memorandum of understanding last year at the Gas Tech Forum in Milano. And now we are considering the possibility of building of LNG terminal and gas plant in our country. So, and I can say now that we are on good path, and we have very good statistics right now, because only one gas plant, only this gas plant could satisfy all the energy needs in our country. All the rest could be used either for export or for big data centers. So there are also some statistics showing us that in next 5 years, we will have an increase of energy consumptions in European Union by 400%. So this is our opportunity. Regardless of that, my country had in 2 years in a row increase 4 and 5% of the energy consumptions. Why? Because the energy is cheap, and people, especially in north, are switching to energy sources for heating. So I grew up in one small town in north of my country. So I have never seen in my life air conditioning AC in any house in my town. Now when I go to my hometown, every house has an AC.
Nina, have you seen this change to using more energy in this region?
Well, there is a difference between they had auction market of electricity and the retail price. The retail price is one among, in the Western Balkans, is the cheapest in Europe, but actually the day-ahead electricity price in the Western Balkans is actually among the most expensive in Europe. And this difference actually comes from subsidies. So electricity prices are highly subsidized in the region, especially for households' consumption.
Interesting. Ruben, the minister mentioned the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, the CBAM, a few minutes ago. Can you tell us how that could perhaps put pressure on the Western Balkans and the EU to become closer on a faster timeline? Because the CBAM record keeping is starting now. The charges will start soon. How is this going to all work out?
Yeah, happy to go into that a little bit. So actually, the CBAM's definitive phase, so the phase with financial adjustment, has been live now for almost exactly 3 months since the beginning of January this year. It has already profoundly reshaped Western Balkans' electricity markets. We do see that the Western Balkans, they had electricity prices trade at an average of 30 euros per megawatt hour discount to their EU neighbors. So this is a very new development that we're seeing. Before, for example, last year, electricity prices in the region were quite in sync between Western Balkans and the EU neighbors. So this means that electricity traders are already taking into account their obligation to pay for CBAM on electricity imports from the Western Balkans to the European Union. So we estimate that CBAM obligations are around 30 to 50 euros per megawatt hour for the countries in the region. For Montenegro, around 30 euros per megawatt hour. This is based on the default values for emission factors that the European Union has published. But now there is also a process of revising these. This is based on assumptions of the revised values. We also see a very strong volatility in these price spreads. So this may, to some extent, reflect also fundamental uncertainty regarding the CBAM obligations. As I said, the Commission proposed a number of amendments to revise this regulation in late December, so very close to the start of the definitive phase. This would fundamentally reduce CBAM obligations from around 60 to 80 euros per megawatt hour, according to the old rules, to 30 to 50, more or less, as I mentioned. So paradoxically, we actually, or maybe at least counterintuitively, we see lower prices now in the Western Balkans because of CBAM, even though there's a price surcharge. But we have to remember this is a price surcharge or a payment obligation for exports, or from the point of view of the EU, for imports into the European Union. So traders only buy electricity if they can cover this difference through buying cheaper. So actually this depresses prices on day-ahead markets in the region. Maybe I'll leave it at that, and I can expand on also the impacts on renewable investment incentives and on market coupling further on.
Yeah, I want to come back to that in a minute. Nina, did you wish to add something?
I wanted to talk slightly, just to give you some statistics on CBAM and why this is an important issue in the Western Balkans. So if we look at the exposure of CBAM-related exports of the Western Balkans towards the EU, we see actually that these figures are quite substantial. And the exposure ranges from 7% in North Macedonia to as high as 30% in Montenegro. So these are, you know, high economic costs. And for many of these countries in the Western Balkans, this is because of a high electricity export. Actually, electricity in Montenegro is the most important exporting good. I would like to touch upon what Minister Šahmanović said about changing regulatory framework. This is true. Regulatory framework is not easy to adapt. It's not something you do overnight. It requires time and effort, not only in enacting these laws, but also in implementation, which is quite complex. And we live in times where regulatory frameworks always has to be adjusted at the EU, and then countries need to follow suit. So that's not easy. I mean, all of that comes CBAM, which is an additional burden on regulatory too, because Western Balkan countries need to come up with ETS. And only Montenegro so far has ETS imposed in the Western Balkans.
That's the emissions trading system, which is the EU's cap and trade carbon management protocol, for listeners who aren't familiar with it intimately as some of us are.
So the transition, you know, towards the EU will happen, but, you know, it's a process. And it's a challenging process because they're changing nonstop, not only because of the CBAM, because of the crisis and in the Middle East and so forth.
In the next part of our podcast, I'd like to start out by talking more about coal. This is a part of the European continent where coal power is still very important, as I understand. So, Minister, what does that look like to you? Where does the coal come from? And what is the plan, if there is one, for diversifying? You mentioned this one big project coming out, but walk us through coal specifically and how that plays into the system.
Just briefly about the CBAM. In December, like, I was very much nervous about it, and somehow it came by surprise. We all hoped that there might be some delay in the implementation of this regulation, and actually, I'm talking about our region, no one did something to prevent this and to be prepared for this. So I asked for some meetings in Brussels, and I was there. I think as we are the smallest country with the smallest impact, I think we were the loudest one. I have to say that I had some unpleasant meetings with some EU officials, because they're imposing something that which is not in line with a green agenda, with a reform agenda. So they were punishing us for being a good student. So I said, okay, we are doing something, we are going into something that we don't know the full impact of it. So, and you know what? They told me at the end of the day, look, it's not the first time that we are doing something like this. But our economy of my country is suffering because of that. We will learn by doing it, something like that. So in the beginning of January, we were very much upset with the development because no one wanted to buy energy from us. And we are exporting in first and the fourth quarter because we have a lot of rain. And Now, at the time when we had the market price around 150 euros per megawatt, no one wanted to pay us more than 50 euros for megawatt. And this raised alarm in our country, in our system. But thankfully, thanks God, now it's a much better situation. Now we have these 5 amendments announced by the European Commission, which will be eventually sometimes adopted, I think. But I see traders are more relaxed and now they're buying from us. And also there is a problem from the transition, from the transit of energy, because all the energy from Greece goes through Montenegro. So we have calculated on the basis of the last year volume that European Union will impose additionally 200 of million of costs to EU. So they are importing inflation. So, but it didn't help, but I tried. Talking about coal. So coal thermal plant is, as I said, is like, let's say we have like in the market share in the energy sector, we have like 60% coming from renewables and around 40%, let's say, from thermal plant. So we have like our just transition way is clear. We just have to shut down the thermal plant. We did everything, but it's not so easy. I'm also leading the Council for Just Transition. And so thermal plant and coal mine, they're located in one city called Pljevlja, north of Montenegro. And together, like they're employing around 1,600 of people. So killing thermal plant means killing the whole city. We have support of the World Bank and UNDP, and we now have to create new jobs to train the people to do something else. And also, parallel with that, we have to come up with new energy sources, which are base load profile. And finally, we have come with the National Energy Climate Plan, where we have defined that we will shut down the thermal plant at latest by 2041. So in the meanwhile, we have to find alternative. And also not to forget that we have done almost the whole reconstruction of the thermal plant and with the ecological components, and that we have decreased the number of substances and CO2 emissions because this city of Pljevlja is suffering a lot because of this pollution. So this is our plan to build, to construct new renewable. I think this is the only way to do it in the right manner.
Nina, help us with some context here.
Thank you. So basically, production from coal plants is an issue in the Western Balkan, across all the 6 Western Balkan countries but Albania, which runs fully on mostly on hydro potential and thus green energy. In Montenegro, National Energy Climate Plan, as Minister Šahmanović said, does plan to phase out coal dependence by 2041. But initially it was 2035. And the extension comes from the renovation of this coal plant, in which, I'm not mistaken, Minister, you can tell me, around 88 million euros were invested. Now, of course, that around 40% of, to be more precise, 41% in 2024 of electricity power comes from this coal plant, thermal coal plant in Preve, which is roughly 4 percentage points less than 10 years earlier in 2014. Of course, this is not an easy decision to do. You know, in Kosovo, you have 90% of the electricity coming from coal, and 7% of GDP in Kosovo is mining. So it is this electricity sector. You cannot just like lay off people like that. And you need to do some reskilling of people who are, you know, and Kosovo itself has, when I mentioned Kosovo, also demographic issues and immigration issues. So it's not just easy to open up new green production capacities, but it is of pivotal importance because, in particular in Plevlja, people are battling health issues because of this coal plant. So this can be an opportunity for the Western Balkan region to move away from coal towards the green transition, the potential that they really, really have. And it will also allow these countries to decentralize their economy as well. Many of these countries, like Albania and Montenegro, also service-based economies, but they have this large and untapped green potential. So this is, it's a risk, but it's a high opportunity too.
Thanks. Reuven, can you respond to some of the frustration we heard about working with the European Union on this? Is this typical for countries in the neighborhood that are trying to adjust?
It's not necessarily typical, but I think for CBAM, it definitely is. There is a pattern here. And I think, all of the countries in the region are frustrated about how CBAM was designed and introduced. And Montenegro was, I think, the most vocal, as the minister has said, about this. But also, for example, ourselves at Hamann Center Berlin, we've done a lot of research on the topic and then also talked to the Commission. And we also think that the rules for electricity specifically are not perfectly designed. First of all, the way the default values for emission factors are calculated based on long-term five-year averages, they basically penalize imports during hours with excess renewable generation. In other words, CBAM penalizes low-carbon imports and risks getting the carbon signal wrong. And then also, secondly, there are high hurdles for obtaining a CBAM exemption for the electricity sector, which is needed for joining the day-ahead market coupling with the European Union. So in other words, here, CBAM could actually slow down exactly this electricity market integration that the EU desires and also has spent years trying to build. And also in a joint Bruegel analysis last November, together with Georg Zachmann and Ben McWilliams, we proposed that either electricity would be excluded completely from CBAM, or the rules for it should be reformed so that there'd be better emissions accounting, so more real-time hourly default values, not multi-annual averages, also more realistic exception conditions and an alignment with market coupling timelines. The Commission has not taken up all of these proposals, unfortunately. But with the amendments passed in late December, I think at least some of the worst impacts have been prevented. So this move from the fossil fuel average default values, which would be very penalizing, to the average grid emission factors, is a market improvement. But yeah, in general, I think I agree. There is a lot of frustration here, and the way the CBAM was introduced specifically for electricity was not perfect. I think part of the reason here is also that CBAM, if we think about internally in the EU architecture, how this has been designed, DG TaxSud, so the Tax and Customs Directorate General, was in the lead here. They know a lot about trade, about customs, about taxation, and the way CBAM is designed works quite well for the other industrial goods, so aluminium, steel, cement, fertilizers, etc. But for electricity, of course, this is a very special commodity that behaves very differently, and the rules here are really not perfectly designed. So I agree here with, or largely agree here with the minister, that the way this was introduced is really not ideal.
Minister, I know we only have a few minutes left with you. So what would you like to make sure that our listeners hear? Do you want to keep talking about CBAM or the enlargement process? Is there anything bigger picture that you think listeners outside Montenegro should know about how your country is working with the EU and to decouple from Russia and other geopolitically difficult parts of the world?
A very good question. So everything I said, there is one more project that could be important for us and for European Union. There is like a gas pipeline that came from Caspian area to Albania called like Trans-Anadolu pipeline. And we have a plan to try, together with our neighbors from Albania, Bosnia, and Croatia, to move it forward to Croatia and to enable European Union southern energy corridor, which can be very valuable, especially in a situation like we had with Russia's aggression to Ukraine and with all this other crises. And also, there is an aspect of this project and another project that I mentioned that we are working with Japanese company to build another pipeline from south to Serbia, from the coast to Serbia, and also to enable Serbia and our other neighbors alternative to Russian gas and other energies. So this is our idea to become energy hub, I said. And also with all these laws in place, with 100% alignment with the EU acquis, we think that this is the best way to enhance the investment climate in our country and to show European companies and all other companies coming from our partner countries that we are a safe destination for investments. Unfortunately, we don't have so many European companies investing in our country. So I would like to invite all interested investors to come to our country to invest their money. And they will be very happy with us. Our government is, let's say, like 24/7 available for projects like this, for projects that will bring benefits to my country and which will strengthen our energy system. So now is the right situation. Now is the right time, because when we get to the European Union, everything will be much more complicated and much more expensive. So this is the right time, as I'm repeating this all every time I have opportunity. Miss Ursula von der Leyen said it literally, like investment in Montenegro means investment in European Union. So our market is small, but with our market integration process, with our market coupling with Italy, it means that you can, like, and with Croatia as well, which is part of the EU, you can literally have access to all EU energy market. So this is our message. Montenegro is open for business.
Thank you so much. We are going to keep talking about the study a little bit, but I thank you so much for taking the time this morning. You're welcome to stay, but I know you said you had to go, so I wanted to give you a chance to wrap up. It's been great to have you on the show. Nina, could you put this in context of the rest of the Western Balkans? We've been hearing about Montenegro, which of course is so close in the accession acquis. We've got five other countries that have very different conditions. How do we look at the whole situation?
Well, the West Balkan countries are so diverse on many levels, and including the energy market. As I said, Albania runs fully on green energy, but other countries have coal dependence, and they're phasing it out, as mentioned by the minister. Also, they are differently positioned when it comes to their alignment with the EU acquis necessary for the market coupling. So you have, like, for instance, Bosnia and Herzegovina and Kosovo are a bit lagging behind, but North Macedonia is the leader when it comes to the regulation on market coupling and integration. And Roman, you can correct me if I'm wrong. So there's a lot of dynamics in this region. There is a lot of in investment potential. Many countries are phasing out slowly coal, but they're doing it in a different way. North Macedonia has done a tremendous job in phasing out coal. For instance, in 2014, it had 70% of electricity produced for coal, and in 2024, only 37%. This didn't come only from the investment in renewables, but also in gas facilities too. Then you have Montenegro that is investing a lot in wind power plants. So there are different dynamics, and the way they're handling the green transition, but also electricity market coupling regulation, differs from country to country.
Reuven, what do you make of it?
Yeah, maybe I wanted to raise one point. So the minister mentioned the potential investment in an LNG terminal in Montenegro. There are these discussions also mentioned by the minister on the Southern Energy Corridor. So basically the idea of linking the trans Adriatic pipeline that goes from Greece via Albania to Italy and linking in Albania to that and connecting that to Montenegro and Croatia. He also mentioned the Montenegro-Serbia pipeline idea. I would be really careful here, just as the region and also as Montenegro specifically, not to lock yourself into expensive fossil fuel infrastructure too much, at least. I think gas can play a limited role to basically help balance renewables. But if we talk about all these large infrastructure investments, these are really multi-billion euro investments. For a small country as Montenegro, this is not something that should be taken lightly. And I think if there are private investors willing to invest in these infrastructure, maybe, yeah, sure, it can help to diversify the energy mix. But I would be really careful here not to put too much government money here on the table to lock yourself into this fossil infrastructure, especially now when we're talking about gas prices being double or triple as they were and remaining probably long-term structurally higher than in the past, at least for the foreseeable years. It's not really very clear whether gas is the way forward here, that is really the cheapest way to diversify. I think renewables are really cheap, storage is getting cheaper and cheaper, so battery energy storage. There is a lot of hydropower in the region that can help balance variable renewables like solar and wind. So I think really looking at what the trade-offs here and making careful decisions is really important. And maybe one more point also on the coal phase-out. So there is this process that basically Montenegro has this 2041 phase-out date, but that is kind of an administratively set date. It can always be overtaken by a reality, and we have seen this in a couple of EU countries where you set a phase-out date, you make a just transition plan, but then suddenly reality kicks in, carbon prices are increasing. Montenegro plans to join the EU in the next couple of years. They will face EU emissions trading system prices, so 70 euros per ton of CO2 at the moment. By 2030, this might increase to 100 or 150 euros per ton. And suddenly the economics of this coal plant will look very, very differently. And we might be in a situation where it might no longer be economical to operate this plant even before the planned phase-out date. And I think the country really needs to be prepared and have a plan B here to also help the miners, the workers in the plant in a possible scenario of a faster transition.
You mentioned subsidies and the need not to go overboard. Within the EU, we talk a lot about the trade-offs of spending money versus the EU's efforts at fiscal discipline. Is that also important for the accession countries?
In principle, yes. Talking on subsidies, I mean, subsidies are a big part of the electricity market and energy in this region. Energy sector in the Western Balkans is state-owned enterprise, owned, and I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast that electricity prices are largely subsidized. While, of course, this takes away from the household and industry, it is a weight on the revenues of these enterprises, but also budget revenues too. In addition to that, with low electricity prices, you are less able to efficiently control the use of electricity because if electricity is cheap, you're less reluctant to save energy and electricity in general.
Maybe one more point to add here, and I think now we're kind of coming full circle. Also with CBAM and the effects that CBAM has in the region, the lower wholesale prices, and also reduced export flows from the region to the European Union, we see markedly lower export revenues, electricity export revenues. These revenues were traditionally used by the state-owned utilities to cross-subsidize household prices. This CBAM also puts a lot of pressure on these subsidy schemes in the region. I think for some of the countries in the region, there might be a breaking point, if I may say, where the subsidies have to be revised and retail prices for households have to be increased. And this will be a very difficult process politically, also socially, but I think it is something that is eventually necessary.
In the energy context, does it matter that Kosovo is not yet recognized by all the EU countries?
It is part of the energy community. For the electricity market coupling, it doesn't matter.
So that was my next question, is explain to us about the energy community. This is a group of, as I understand it, the Western Balkans and certain European Union countries. What is this and how does it work?
The energy community is a project, if I may call it, that basically aims to integrate countries in the eastern and southeastern neighborhood of the European Union into energy markets before full EU accession. So we have the Western Balkans countries, the six countries in the region that are contracting parties to the energy community, also Ukraine, Moldova, and Georgia. Basically, the idea is that countries agree to adopt and implement large parts of the energy and environmental acquis, so the rules governing energy and environmental areas in the European Union in exchange, although this exchange is maybe not always explicit, but I think the core idea is that in exchange, the countries will join the internal market, the internal energy market, before joining the European Union. And this is basically what we call when we refer to market coupling. So really integrating day ahead and also intraday markets eventually, and linking those markets very closely with the European Union. And this, of course, only works if you have the same rules governing these markets. And therefore, there's this process of adopting and implementing the acquis in this area.
Thanks so much for that. As we close out this really interesting episode of The Sound of Economics, would either of you like to add any closing thoughts or things that you want to make sure people who are new to this topic want to make sure they understand?
I would like to conclude that the Western Balkans is very important for the European Union in the context of the electricity market coupling. So this is a very small market, and the whole Western Balkans is size of the Belgian market, so it is small. But when it comes to economic potential, the economic potential outweighed the size of this electricity market. And as I said at the beginning, 70% of electricity flows through the Western Balkans is the EU electricity. And the enlargement of the electricity market towards this region is really about unification of the electricity market for Europe, giving the statistics.
Yeah, definitely. I think this role is really an outsized role that the region has in Southeastern Europe. The region is really important for electricity transit flows. So this is the 70% number that Nina mentioned. But also there is, when we just look at the renewable potential and complementarities of renewable sources, Western Balkans region can be really valuable puzzle piece for the energy transition of Europe more broadly. One thing that we looked at in our study, for example, is the complementarity of wind resources. It's really interesting pattern there that when it's not as windy in Western and Northern Europe, for example, in the North Sea region, it is often very windy in the Western Balkans and vice versa. So there's really this complementarity that if you link the region closer, you can balance your renewable resources much better, and you need less investments in long-term storage, for example.
Thanks so much. You've been listening to The Sound of Economics from Bruegel. We have been joined today by Ruben Stubbe from the Helmholtz Zentrum in Berlin, and of course from Montenegro, Minister Admir Shakmanovic, who is the Minister of Energy and Mining in that country, and then our very own Western Balkans fellow, Nina Vojanovic. You can find Nina and Ruben's study and other related work from Bruegel in the show notes. And for free on our website, you can find all of our podcast archives on all of your favorite podcast channels. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.